Welcome to another episode of the Milwaukee Sports Performance Podcast. I am your host, Lauren Falk, and I am joined today again by Ben Shepherd. This is his second appearance on the podcast with us. For those of you who don't know Ben, he is the co-director of coaching at FC Wisconsin and also has a personal background as a college soccer player, as well as having coached on various division levels as well, outside of what he's currently doing on the club level. So for those of you who did not hear our first podcast, we were actually transcontinental, so this time we're not. The accent's still there, but we're not transcontinental this time. So last time we talked about it as football. This time we're going to force them to say soccer the whole time instead. You know, got to stay true to whatever continent your feet are currently residing on, you know. But super excited to have Ben back on the podcast. This one actually was inspired from feedback and questions from our first podcast. So today we are tackling the topic of college recruiting, specifically surrounding soccer, obviously, since that's his background. Things have changed a bit over the years, and I think it's really important to like shed some light on what has changed, but also what does this process look like, especially if you're a parent who's going through this for the first time with a child, kind of wrapping your mind around the whole picture versus just this isolated thought process of getting your kid into college soccer, and just kind of help you better understand both player and parent, like what to expect, what are some good things to think through as you go through this, and so much more. So Ben, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Lauren. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Last time we got a good education on English football tradition. So if you guys want to reference that, you can go back and check out our first podcast and learn all about Boxing Day and English soccer traditions, but we'll spare you guys that this time around. So to start off, we are just going to actually backtrack a bit because we actually touched on a few of these things in our last podcast, but I kind of wanted to put it all together in one so we can really have a full conversation about recruiting. So first of all, let's just start at the very beginning, Ben. When do you start talking about, you know, the thought process of wanting to play in college with your kids, or when does that kind of roughly what age and what situation does that kind of come on the table?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the college recruiting process, it probably starts once you get into high school, right? Mm-hmm. I think as kind of a freshman or sophomore, you start to see players that maybe have the potential that could play in college. And that's probably when they start to think about it as well. What I would say, and I'll preface this whole conversation, is if your son or daughter gets to the stage where they are thinking of playing in college, or and there is college interest, that's a good thing. And yes, it can be a daunting process, and, you know, and it's kind of a minefield in terms of all the information. But the amount of parents we deal with where they're so stressed out by the whole process, and I'm like, listen, look at it in a different light, as in this whole process is a good thing. This means your son or daughter have got to a level where they might get to play in college at a sport they love playing. So let's try and actually enjoy the whole process. As much as it can be difficult and frustrating and, you know, like I said, stressful at times, we have to always keep that in mind, that this is a positive thing, and let's make sure we try and keep it as a positive process as opposed to sometimes becoming negative and too stressful for everybody involved.
Absolutely. And being excited that your kid is really motivated over something too, you know, following those things and letting that be their own fuel and their own internal process is super important, because when it's driven by them, that's what usually makes it more fruitful too.
Yeah. And I think it's also important for players and parents to realize that for different players, it becomes more evident for them at different ages. So if we've had kids 12 years of age that have you've just known, and that kid has known, I want to be a soccer player that plays in college. There's other kids we've had at 17 have decided at age 17, you know what? I think I want to play in college. So the timeline in terms of a player and a person realizing they might want to do it is very different. And you've got to allow that to happen organically. And again, we'll touch on this as we go through, but it's got to come from the player first. And most importantly, they've got to want to do it. And again, but they don't need to want to do it at 13, 14, 15. It could be the later stage as well, and just remembering that as well.
Yeah, and that's good to know that should your child at the age of 17 all of a sudden get motivated over it, it doesn't mean they're out of the game. You know, obviously we'll talk about like the preparation and actions that occur, that obviously timing's you know, can play into that a little bit, but good to know that at any time they are feeling strong over this, there's still an opportunity.
Yeah, it's never too late. I mean, I think people get so stressed out, have I missed the boat? I always say this, if you're playing at a good club on a pretty decent team, there is a level for everybody to play at in college. Now, whether that's Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA, or a junior college, there is a level for everybody to be able to play at. It's just whether that matches your academics, your social bit, and what you're looking to study. So it doesn't mean everybody's going to play, but there is a level for everybody to look at and be interested in.
So kind of talking about that, as a player of yours comes up to you and says, hey, I think I really want to play in college. You know, how does that conversation go? How do we talk about where they want to look at? What are some good options? You know, there are a lot of options out there from D1 to D3 to NAIA and all the above. What does that conversation look like? And what do you advise them as they are starting to think through, where do I want to land?
Yeah, so we, as a club, we do a, once a year, we do a big club-wide presentation, and we make it kind of mandatory where freshmen and up have to watch our Zoom presentation that we do live. And we always encourage parents to be on that as well, because it's vitally important that they know the process as well and what they should be doing. So as a freshman, it's more about focusing on grades in high school, making sure you get a good freshman year. Okay. Yeah. Making sure the amount of times we've dealt with players as juniors and seniors, and they're still paying for their freshman year in terms of their grades. So as a freshman, it's vitally important, get a good start to high school, get good grades, make sure your grades don't stop you getting to where you want to go to. They actually help you get to the school you want to go to. Sophomore year, that you can start to kind of say to them, start to think about the process, maybe look at, you know, some schools you might be interested. But in reality, it's really at the end of your sophomore year is when it ramps up on the guy side. Now, on the girl side, it's a little bit different. They get recruited a bit younger. Yeah. But on the boy side, which is where I'm more familiar, basically after the sophomore year is when you really start to focus. So we will say to players and parents, we'll have an individual sit down meeting with you, with the player and his parents, and we'll give them our feedback on what level we think they should be looking at. Mm-hmm. And we always say, come to that meeting with at least 20 to 25 schools across all divisions, 1, 2, 3, maybe even NAIA, but come with a big list of schools and say, these are schools we think we might have interest in. And then we look at that list and we give our honest feedback of, okay, we think these are realistic. These probably not so much. These would be kind of reach schools, but maybe if you develop at a certain rate, you might get there. And again, this is all just our opinion, you know, and if we're meeting with a kid at the end of his sophomore year, a lot can happen in 2 years. So we always preface it with, this is where we just see you right now. That can change based on how you develop, for the positive or for the negative, right? But it's, this is where we see you right now. This is the level we think you could be successful at and where you need to look. And then we kind of go through that process, and we try and make it very individual, because every player and every parent's recruiting journey and recruiting process is different. You know, for one kid, it might be all about, I just want to try and play at the highest level possible. That's it. For another player, it might be, listen, academics are far more important to me. So I want to play in college, but the academics have to be right. And I have to make sure I'm getting the right education. For someone else, it might be the size, location. So it's very different for each individual and each family. So we have to find out, okay, what's important to you? What are the really, really important things that you're looking for? And then we try and marry up the schools to what they're looking to try and achieve as well, and what's important to them.
Absolutely. And I like what you had really said in our last podcast too, of, especially as we kind of get down to those final few, telling them to think about, you know, heaven forbid, but if you were to get hurt and no longer be able to play soccer, would this be a school where you would be happy and fulfilled and still achieve your other goals?
Yeah, that's the most important. As they then get into, you know, late into your junior year, senior year, when it comes down to actually making the decision, we always say, listen, you've got to look at it this way. Like you said, heaven forbid you go to a school and you get injured the first day of preseason and you can never play soccer again. Would you still want to be at that school? And if the answer is no, then it's probably not the right school for you, because we're not naive. We're not trying to say we're producing professional players. We're producing players to go play in college and have the best overall experience possible, you know, in terms of everything, the social, the academics. So for us, it's about the right fit. And yes, soccer is a part of that, but it's only a part of that. And it's more about the school, the academics, and the overall experience that you're going to get.
Absolutely. And I think too, I think that's, you're getting at the crux of it, is it's, the sport is always a driving factor if that's something that's really motivating you to look at colleges and things like that. But you do have to take that moment to take it out of the equation to really make sure that the decision you're making for the next 4 to 5 years of your life potentially is going to be a good fit for you as a person. Because when you're fitting there correctly, both personally, academically, it makes all the other aspects of soccer easier for you too, to be present on your team, to be able to manage the stresses of being on a team, to do all those things. And so, again, not just kind of get the blinders of, this is the best soccer program, I must be at X location. There's so much more that goes into that equation than most.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and sometimes it's convincing the player and the parents at times that, listen, the label of playing D1 or D3 has no correlation on your experience that you might have at that institution.
Yeah.
You might go and play D1, but you may hate the experience of the school and the academics. You might go play D3 and just thoroughly enjoy that whole experience, you know? So the label of the level you're playing at doesn't correlate to the experience that you're going to have. It can do, but not all the time. And it's keeping that open mind as well, and recognizing, again, it's not always about what division you're playing at. It's about making sure it's the right fit for you as an individual, and you're going to enjoy the 4 years.
And there are some very good Division III and NAIA teams.
Yeah, I always use the example. I was coaching at a Division II school in South Carolina, and I left there to come to Milwaukee. And at that time, the team I left in South Carolina at Division II school was better than the Division I school I inherited. There are good players playing at all levels. And there are very, very good teams at all levels as well.
Yeah, it's easy to be biased to kind of like what you see in the media. Like, you see the big name schools, you see the Division I schools. It's easy to gravitate to those. But big name doesn't always mean big success, you know? And so, like you're saying, there are some really good lower division schools that are incredibly good soccer programs and have really good players that, you know, just don't be biased by a name, you know?
No. The biggest struggle we have is making sure players stay open-minded to looking at every possible opportunity and
Absolutely.
Not just think, well, these are five Division III schools. I only want to go to University of North Carolina. Well, yeah, everybody does. Unfortunately, we don't get to do that.
You and everybody else.
Yeah. You know, it's such a competitive world. And I'm sure we'll touch on this in a little bit, but the amount of international players now that play over here, it makes it really difficult for seniors and true American seniors in high school. So you're not always going to get everything that you want, you know. So it's being really open-minded to making sure, again, go back to it, that you're making the right fit for you as an individual.
Totally. So once you've kind of started down this process with us, with an athlete, and we're starting to kind of maybe get, you know, into that sophomore, junior, like this process is starting to evolve and they're starting to find some schools that are maybe within their interests and are starting to become that right fit or fitting for their level of play. What are those like initial steps looking like for that player?
Yeah. So once they get a list kind of narrowed down, you know, going into junior year of maybe the 15, 20 schools that they might have an interest in, we talk a lot about, you know, we talk a lot as a club about owning your own development. And then we talk a lot about the recruiting process. You have to drive your own recruiting process. So the player has to drive and initiate the recruiting process. It is not like you see in the movies where a college coach just rocks up at your game, watches you play, and makes you a scholarship offer. It's naive. It's not realistic. Ultimately,
they don't roll out the red carpet and bring the paperwork.
Doesn't happen, unfortunately, especially for Wisconsin players.
Yeah.
And we'll touch on that later too. But it's very much the player has to initiate the recruiting process. So, and players and parents sometimes get it backwards, that they think it's the college coaches coming to them.
Yeah.
It is the player that initiates the recruiting process by emailing schools about their interest in their program. So they've got to market themselves, show interest in their program, you know, have a player profile, talk about their schedule, where they're playing, things like that. So it's them that initiates that contact. Then it comes down to a little bit, rightly or wrongly, this is just how the world works. It's about who your club coaches know. Because we always say
connections.
When you email a college coach, attach me to it, because then I will reply to that college coach and I'll take you off of it and I'll say, hey, listen, this kid's a good kid. You need to try and watch this kid play. And then hopefully those college coaches come and watch you play. So it's about using all the resources you have and the connections that your club coaches have as well. But again, it all starts from the player initiating the process.
Absolutely. And so when a player is kind of emailing a coach, you kind of commented about like, here's some days that I'm playing, or what are some things that they might include, and maybe not necessarily the total initial contact, but what are some things that are really good points to communicate as a player to a potential coach as you are writing and reaching out to them?
Yeah, it's important. The first email is important, right? Because it's you're never going to get to send that first email again. Yeah. So it's important. And we have like a template that we send our players to help them. But first off, and as basic as this sounds, get the school right. The amount of times where kids will just send an email and get the school wrong. And
I had a recruit at Marquette that spelled the head coach's name wrong when he sent out his email. Makes a difference.
Straight away, just get deleted.
And it makes for a long-term internal coaching joke as well, because you will never forget the kid that called you the wrong name or the wrong school.
Or you're emailing Marquette and you're saying, I really want to go to Milwaukee.
That probably puts you at the bottom of the list.
Exactly. So
especially in that situation.
Yeah. So it's so important that you, in your opening paragraph, you say who you are, you say the club you play for, you say your year, and even though you're probably sending a similar email to 15, 20 schools, in that first paragraph, have at least one or two sentences that pertain to that particular school.
Yeah. Why you like them, what drew you to them.
Yeah, just putting in there, I see last year you went 15, 5, and 6, and it was your third year being there, and you went to the NCAAs. Just that one sentence shows, okay, this kid has done a bit of research.
Yeah.
As opposed to just sending an email, the same email to 20 coaches saying, hey, I'm such and such, really interested in your program, would love to come on a visit. And you can tell that's been sent to 20 other college coaches. So
it shows no initiative as well.
Yeah, it takes a lot more work, but that initial opening paragraph, make sure there's something in there that pertains to that particular school or that particular coach. And then you have to put in, like I said, the club you play for, the team, have your schedule in there, and then attach kind of your player profile as well, which has your height, your academics, really important, your GPA, ACT or SAT, if you've done it. Those are really key things that college coaches want to know. Yep. And then who your club contacts are. So the college coaches can see those as well. The other piece as well, which is important, is say you're going to a showcase in December. Okay. That first email shouldn't go to all these college coaches a week before you go to a showcase. Mm-hmm. And so, because the amount of emails that college coaches get of kids wanting to watch them play, okay, you've got to establish that connection and that communication a couple months previously. So there needs to have been 3 or 4 emails back and forth with you and the coach before that showcase takes place.
Yeah.
And they're more willing and more likely to come and watch you play, as opposed to, okay, random Ben has sent me an email to come and watch him play this weekend. I know nothing about the kid, never really spoken to him, as opposed to somebody that's been emailing over a 2-month period. I'm going to take the time to watch this kid play instead. So it's about making sure you establish contact and communication, not the week before a showcase, but at least a month or so before that showcase, to try and have some communication back and forth.
Absolutely. No, I think that really, like you're saying, it really puts the onus on the player to drive the boat, to be thoughtful in your timing and not just do it haphazardly and last minute. You know, and like you're saying, you're giving that coach that adequate time to get to know you, to be invested in wanting to come see you. And again, not making it sound so cookie cutter, which is important, because literally, like you're saying, you don't get to send that first email again. And that's, I think, a really poignant statement to make, is that like, you have to make that impression immediately to show them that you're a person that you want on their team potentially. And like you said, you don't get to do that over again. The rest can all figure itself out, but step one is probably one of the most important steps of that whole thing. So during that process, so players are starting this process. They are, you know, starting to reach out to schools that they're interested. What are you advising the parents on at this point? What is their role in this situation as the ball starts to get rolling?
The parents have a really important role. They have a really important role behind the scenes in terms of support and guidance, but it shouldn't be a really important role in terms of driving the process.
Yeah.
And as a parent, if you find yourself writing these emails for your son or daughter, and you find yourself having to really push them and get on them all the time to send these emails and to follow up with college coaches, then I always ask, well, is it you that wants them to play in college, or is it them that want to play in college? And it's important. Yeah. And there's a balance too, right? Because there are sometimes kids that are unsure whether they should play or not. And sometimes it's helped that the parents have maybe pushed them a little bit.
Yeah, hold the kid accountable.
Yeah, because it was the right decision for that kid to go and play. So they need to be pushed a little bit, but they can't be totally pushed into doing it. They've got to want to do it as well and take initiative. So by all means, the parent is there to help put together the email for the kid, right? To make sure it's done well, to read over it for them.
Yeah, edit it, work on it together, sure.
Exactly. That they're there to help in terms of looking at schools that they think might be of interest. You know, because obviously financially, most parents are probably going to have to help initially. So it's looking at that. Is it realistic for you as a family?
Correct.
So it should be between the parents and the players coming up with these schools that they think are realistic, helping with the process, having communication with your club coaches as well. That's all they're there to do, to support, guide, help with the process, but making sure it's the kid that is driving that process and that they really want to do it. And if there are red flags already that he's not really into it or she's not really into it, then it's a problem. And you might need to sit down and really have that conversation. Is this something you want to do? Because we always talk about it. Playing in college is not always fun. It's hard. It's tough.
It's a lot of work.
You're expected to be a full-time student and a full-time athlete. And I always use the phrase, or started using the phrase at least, about there's a big difference between a good sportsman or good sportswoman and an athlete. There are lots of people that are just good at sports, right? And they enjoy playing sport.
They play the game,
They just play to enjoy it, but they're not necessarily really competitive or want to go to a high level. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
There are people who are athletes, who are good at sports, but they're willing to dedicate a significant part of their life to playing at a high level. And there's a big difference between a good sportsman or sportswoman and an athlete. And it's figuring out, what am I and what do I want to be? And both are great. They're just different. There are a lot, like I said, there are lots of people who are really good at sports, but just don't choose to go and play at college or at a high level.
Absolutely.
A lot of sacrifice and a lot of discipline and a lot of resilience. And you've got to give up a lot of things to do it. And that's the difference, you know, and people need to recognize that if they want to play at a high level.
And I will say, just from having treated kids on the higher level, if you struggle to initiate something simple as the effort to put forth, to put on an email down and just get those done, a lot of the other tasks, once you get to the other side, are going to feel very hard if you are struggling to put forth that effort on something as simple as that. So it's kind of a good pressure test too for parents to kind of see, what's your kid capable of and what are they willing to do? Because you have to be willing to do those things on the other side. Because once they're there, unless they're living with you, you're not there to kind of hold their hand and be there through it. So these are good initial steps for them to get that practice of being a more independent person and having to initiate those adult-like things, you know? And that's part of, I think, being an athlete in a college setting at any level kind of accelerates you into adulthood a little bit more, because you have to be the master of your schedule. You have to put in effort when it's uncomfortable more, because your timetables are tighter. Like, there's just a lot more that comes to it. And so if these initial steps are hard, or you're not seeing the interest or initiative, A, I think it's a great question to say, do you still really want this? But then B, if you're unable to really do this, how are we going to do this when this is like on steroids at the next level?
I mean, I always say, if a player isn't self-motivated, it's a big problem. Because when you get to college, there will be times when you just don't want to go to training. And you'd rather you weren't training.
Or you don't want to study for a test.
Exactly. So if you're not self-motivated and you're not disciplined, it's a problem. And it's going to be tough at the next level. you know, and I think we've had players who were good sportsmen that went to college but didn't last 4 years. They need to be good athletes. And when I say good athletes, I mean, are they sacrificing parts of their lives to be able to play at an elite level, which playing in college is?
Absolutely. So during this process, you're kind of talking about the parent, like playing the supportive role, you know, maybe having the conversations about like, have you done your emails? Do you want me to proofread them with you? You know, kind of playing that supportive role and understanding that this process is underway, you know, and there's a variety of parents that are involved in this process. As I've, again, being on the other side, I've seen what it looks like after the kid has signed and is playing. You know, sometimes it's a little bit of a hard conversation with parents too, to say, here's what you can do. Here's probably what you also shouldn't do. What's kind of some of your advice to parents of what that role looks like, and maybe some places to just be cognizant of as you go through this, of maybe some things you could maybe steer away from or navigate differently as they go through this process, like kind of looking back on your experiences with parents, both on the college level and club level? What's some advice of like what to do, what not to do, that you would usually say that kind of highlights at the top of your mind?
Yeah, I mean, the parent's role is really important. Like, and college coaches will always ask us, okay, what's the kid like? What's the player like? What's his parents like? It's always a big question.
Which is really important for them to know that question comes on the table.
100%. And listen, we have to be honest. We have to be honest with college coaches. We're always respectful, but we have to be honest, because if we give the wrong information, then that hurts other players coming through the club later in the line. So the college coaches, the honest truth is they don't want to be dealing with parents.
Correct.
You know, it's different. The club game is different, right? Parents will want communication with coaches, and us as a club, we have to make sure that they're part of the development journey. It's important at these younger ages. When they get to college, college coaches aren't going to deal with parents. They're going to deal with a player, because in their eyes, you're an adult now and you're a student athlete. So very rarely are they going to deal with the parent. They'll deal with the player. So it's so important. They want to know what the parents are like. How are they? How supportive are they? Because ultimately, I always say this, kids are always a victim of their parents. So if the parents aren't great, then they're worried that some of the makeup in that player isn't going to be great either. So it's so important. In the process, yes, in terms of making the decision, and especially when you talk about the finances of going to a school, the college coach will talk with the player and he'll talk with the parents. But you've got to make sure as a parent that you're still allowing the college coach to talk more with your son or daughter than they are you. They still want to make sure they're recruiting your son. They're not recruiting you. Very, very important. And we've had a player in the past who was a really good player, was good enough to play Division I, but none of the Division I schools in state would touch him because of his dad. Now, he still went off and played Division I elsewhere at a lower end mid-major school, but he could have played at a really good Division I school in state, but none of the college coaches would touch him because they knew his dad and they knew what he was like. And it was such a shame for the player, because I think he wanted to stay in state, but he couldn't, because everyone knew what his dad was like behind the scenes. So he had to go out of state to play. So it's so important. Again, the parents are there to help, support, to guide, okay, and make sure they're deemed as a positive in the college coach's eyes, not a negative.
And realize that, like, your job is to help support your child's path to get there. But once they are there, that's their deal.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was working at a Division I soccer program, and we had a parent whose son was a junior who, just by recruiting and new players, started playing less, you know, for a multitude of reasons, was playing less. Mm-hmm. And his mom called the head coach and said, well, we'll call him Billy. Why isn't Billy playing so much anymore? And the coach was obviously had enough tact to say, you know, thank you for calling. I appreciate your phone call. But then had a conversation with the kid in the office saying, why is your mother calling me? You are a 21-year-old adult. You are the master of your journey of being able to play or not. That is, you know, the compilation of your work on and off the field, your efforts, things like that. A phone call from your mother is not going to positively affect your playing time.
I mean, what I would say about that is the honest truth. That is the worst thing you can ever do as a parent.
Yeah.
Rightly or wrongly as a coach.
As much as you want the world for your child.
Yeah. And I get it. Listen, I have two young people now, so I get it.
Yeah.
And it is so hard for a coach to be able to separate and say, listen, I get where it's coming from. They just love their son or daughter. Whereas too often, and I've seen it, some coaches will then go the other way and say, right, I'm just not playing tonight. He's not playing. After that, he's not playing. Or subconsciously, you'll find reasons not to play that kid now. Like in training, he'll make one mistake and you're like, see, that's why he's not playing. Because of that phone call from a parent. Whether rightly or wrongly, that's what happens. And it is so hard to distinguish when a parent calls and causes problems to then not take it out on their son or daughter. It's hard. Now, don't get me wrong. If there is something going on in a child's personal life,
like mental health and safety,
whether it's in club or in college,
hands down,
something you think the college coach should know for their mental health and their well-being, by all means, that's different. Yes. But if it's to contact a coach about playing time at the college level, that's the worst thing you can ever do as a parent.
It's the dreaded phone call.
Yes. Yeah.
When again, it's like your child is becoming an adult. This is their world. This is their journey. You can have whatever conversations you want with your child to guide them or whatever the case may be, but it's ultimately on them, especially at that point. And you have to recognize that that's all part of this process is like you help support them to get there, but now it's their job to execute and follow through and finish that out. And so that's a really important thing. But yeah, I agree. I think parents play a big role, especially when it comes to the financial conversations, because very rarely are full scholarships involved. So you're right. You do have to make sure that this works as a family. You know, a kid could want to play at UNC, but if UNC offers $0 and the family says, we can't do it. You know, that is a conversation point and a role in which the family is definitely very important. But a lot of this does come down to them, you know, driving a process, being supported by you. And then once they are there, they are the owners of their process.
100%. Well, and we hear a lot from our parents when their son is in his freshman year in college. Right, and he's probably not playing, right? And it's like, oh, did we make the right decision? He's not playing. And we always tell them this before, when we go through the process, we always tell players, listen, don't go into your freshman year expecting to play. By all means, go in there with a desire to play, but do not go in there with an expectation to play. Actually go in there and expect not to play a minute freshman year, because then hopefully you'll be surprised. We always use the example, on your high school team, how many freshmen were playing? And they all look at me and go, well, none, coach. Freshmen don't play on my high school team. And then I'm like, okay, times that by 10. And that's the college
level. Better players to the equation.
That's the college level. So why are you expecting to play as a freshman in college? Very rarely does it happen. There are exceptions to the rule, but don't go in there expecting to play as a freshman. And that's hard. So we do talk to some players about, listen, if you're going to go to this level, you may not play for 2 years. Can you handle that? Are you going to be okay with that? Are you willing to really work hard for 2 years without getting immediate reward? And that's difficult for players now, especially in society. For us, it's always when you go in as a freshman, your number one aim is just try and be the best freshman. Can you be the fittest freshman in the fitness test? Can you do all the right things as the best freshman? Are you the most organized freshman? Just try and be the best freshman and then build from there and see what happens. Mm-hmm. The amount of times we hear from our own parents and their kid is now playing, is in college, but maybe not playing initially. And we're like, listen, this is the process now. He's at a higher level. It takes time. But I think it is so difficult now for people to work hard for a consistent basis without getting immediate reward.
Yeah.
And that's where, as coaches, we have to drive that. As parents, we have to drive that. But it's not the society we live in now. People expect to do things and get immediate reward all the time. Yep. And it's not the real world, unfortunately.
Well, I think something, this is probably a decent place to put this, even though we're going to discuss more about recruiting, but I think something that's really important for players and parents to recognize, it's a very different process being recruited and then now being at a program. you know, a coach is spending his time telling you what he likes about you. They are pursuing you once you're kind of on their radar, you know, all this stuff that they're telling you all the great things about yourself. And then you get into a program in which now it's you. And like you said, all these other great players. So times 100. So now you're in a pool of even better players. And you might be starting to be told things that you're not doing well. Or you might have, and now this coach who was telling you you're the most amazing player on the face of the earth, now he's telling you, hey, you're falling short. You got to keep up or whatever. There's a big kind of pendulum that can swing going from recruiting process to being someone's player. Yes, and that is a big mental and emotional adjustment as you're sitting here grinding out two-a-days and the guy that traveled to come see you playing in said tournament and told you how great you played, and now he's sitting here telling you how you are not hacking it. That's a lot to process. And knowing that that's sometimes what happens when you get on the other side of the coin is that he's not going to spend the next 4 to 5 years of your life telling you how amazing you are every day of your practice and playing life too, you know? And so going in eyes wide open, knowing that that's what that sometimes looks like is important to know.
Yeah. I think that's probably the hardest thing for players. And it's probably the hardest thing for coaches, right? As college coaches, and yeah. I've been guilty of this. When you're in season, in the fall, in the college season, you're really focused on getting results. It is not, and don't get this wrong. It's not about development. It's about getting results.
It's about winning in the fall.
About winning. That's it. Winning. And if you're not in that top 16, 18, you're probably not feeling like you're getting much attention, and you're not. It's the truth. You're focused on those players that can help you win. The spring is more about development, and where we really work to improve players, and freshmen probably get more of an opportunity. But in that fall, it is about winning, and we have to be honest with players and talk to them about, listen, this is how it's going to be. You know, are you able to handle this? You know, to your point as well, you know, when you get there, yes, you're going to be really pushed to the limits, and you're going to be told, you know, this is what you need to do better, and A, B, and C. And we always say that there's no such thing as criticism. We always tell our players, listen, that in our opinion, in our club, the word criticism doesn't exist. It is just somebody's opinion on what you can do better.
Yeah, it's feedback.
Whether you choose to listen to that or not, it's up to you. Mm-hmm. But don't, because criticism is always perceived as a negative word, right? He's criticizing me. No, he's not. He's just telling you what he thinks you need to do better. Now it's up to you whether you want to listen to that and apply it, or whether you want to take it personally. Now, as long as it's done in a respectful way, you know, I think it's a good thing. But that's why college coaches will always ask us, does he want to get better? Does he have a willingness to listen? Is he going to be resilient? Those are important things at the next level of not thinking you've cracked it. You're now going in as that freshman in high school now that never played. So you've got to do it all over again. And are you resilient? Are you self-motivated? Are you committed? Do you have a willingness to learn? A really important on that initial first year.
Yep. And those things speak volumes, which we'll talk about down the line. And I just think it's always good to like truly bring light to these things that you can't necessarily see being on the front end of the process. That's important to hear and understand what that whole picture looks like. Versus it kind of sometimes feels like sunshine and rainbows. And not that it isn't, because there's a lot of that too. It is a fun. And, you know, being an athlete is a very unique opportunity. But it's just important to realize that there is like a process that you go through mentally and emotionally as you go through building yourself up as a player, getting recruited, being selected by and selecting a program, and then what it's like once you're actually there. And that's a very broad spectrum, and it's a path, and it's not linear. It could look like a big squiggly line of highs and lows and all the above. But just knowing that it's different than what you think, I think, is what I would say to people. And so as long as you go in eyes wide open recognizing that, I think you're much more prepared than the average person.
Yeah. And I think, again, don't get me wrong, being a student, I think you touched on it there, being a student athlete is the best experience in the world. Unbelievable experience. The reason it is such a good experience is because it's tough. And it's hard, and there's sacrifices, and you're going to go through difficult moments. So that's all part of this great experience and life experience that you're going to get. But you have to realize it's going to be hard. And there's very few of us, very few players that take the escalator in their development. Most of us are on the stairs, and they're wonky stairs that go all over. up and down, right? It's not just straight stairs.
Yeah.
We're on this wonky staircase, which is difficult. You know, there's
embracing that.
Yeah. But there's very few of us that get to just step in the escalator and go straight up.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Whoa. If so, I want to know who that person is because haven't found it yet. So outside the direct college recruiting process, especially once you have a player that expresses to you, hey, I think I want to play at the next level. What does that player development process look like, especially once they've decided, hey, I really want to do this? What are some of the things outside of going through contacting your coaches of interest, looking at schools, yada, yada, yada? What is that other part of the conversation as we are telling a player, okay, yeah, you want to play in college. Here's what you need to do.
Yeah. So we have individual development plans that we try and put together with certain players. So it's some people call it an IDP or whatever. So when we meet with players, these are the things we think you need to improve on. And we might say to a kid, as you stand right now, we think you play at this level, but if you can add this to your game, we think you might get to this level, whether it's a technical aspect, right? Or can you become, better at striking with your left foot, or can you be better under pressure or things like that? A lot of the times, to be totally honest, it's to do with fitness levels. And it's about how you live your life and are you disciplined? And for me, the way we talk about it is, when we're developing players, so say we're talking to a U16, okay? We're not looking at this is what you need right now to play in college, because you're not going to be in college for 2 more years. What we're saying to them is, this is the way the game is going. This is the trend. So in 2 years' time, when you get to college, this is what you need. So we've always got to have an eye on where's the game going, and we've got to make sure we're developing kids for when they get to that level and how it's going to look in 2-3 years' time. And the way the game is going, especially at the higher levels, it's all about transitions. It's all about when you lose it, can you react? High intensity sprints. Obviously, you've got to be good technically, okay? But it is,
you don't have the engine.
There is a big athleticism, athleticism part to it now, which is why I think it is so naive when you talk to some clubs who say, well, we don't do any running or fitness. Everything we do is with the ball. And I'm like, okay, really? Well, when they get to college, they're going to be in for a big shot because they are going to run without the ball. You go to the school in the country, Clemson, UNC, Maryland, they will be doing fitness tests without the ball. And if you've instilled that in your players, okay, because part of it, yes, is a physicality, right, in terms of being able to do it, okay? But part of it is also a mental aspect as well,
but
being able to push yourself and push through things.
Be uncomfortable.
Yeah, and if you don't prepare players for that, you're not preparing them for when they get to that next level. So there's different things, but the big thing that we talk about is, okay, what are you willing to sacrifice to get there? And if you want to play at that level, okay, you've got to be an athlete now. And we always say to players, listen, if you're not doing fitness 2, 3, 4 times a week on your own, it's a problem. That should be the norm for you right now. If you want to be an athlete, you should be doing some type of fitness, whether it's lifting, whether it's running, whatever it is, whether it's recovery, yoga, it should be already, when you get to 16, 17, it should be part of your life and part of your routine. Okay. And if it's
otherwise, it's going to be a shock to your system when you get there if you don't.
If it's not, it's an issue. And you better tell us now. Like I said, sportsmen, sportswomen, and athlete, they're different.
Yep.
An athlete, it's your routine, it's your daily life, and it's got to be part of it now. So it's something we're big on right now with players, because I think it's naive. Kids don't go out and just want to go and run on their own and do fitness on their own. It doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
So you've got to try and instill that in them, and you've got to push them to do it and try and make it habits and a routine and discipline. And like I said, part of their daily lives, it has to become that if they're going to go and play at the next level.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just say, little plug for injury prevention. The more durable your body is because you put forth those efforts, the less likely you are to get hurt and things like that too. It makes you a more durable player. It makes you a more capable player. There's plenty of studies that show those extra efforts affect your ability for top end speed, multi-directional change of direction, all these things. So even though a ball isn't at your foot 24/7, those things pay out dividends outside of, that situation. So I agree that it's good from a habit standpoint. It's good from a mentality standpoint. It's good to learn to be uncomfortable. And then, like you said, it translates. That's the kid that when he loses the ball, he could track back and go get that man. Like, you know, he has that ability to go again and again and again. And that's what you need, you know, for player availability and someone who's going to be present on the field for extended minutes. They have to be able to do the job that's being asked of them. And that doesn't just happen by laying around and playing soccer all by itself.
Exactly. And nutrition is a huge one as well, right? It's important. Yep. Nutrition is so big. But to your point, I was talking to a college coach last week at a high level institution, and he was saying to me, you know, listen, with everything that we do now and the amount of money we invest into these athletes, mm-hmm. we now go back and we look at their injury history. We look at their club injury history. What we want to know from their clubs, how many injuries have they had? Because they need to know, are they durable? You know, or are they going to get to college where it's tough and it's such a
great season?
Yeah, are they going to get injured quickly? So it is important. They're looking at players' injury records and how they live their lives now to see are they a valuable asset to their program.
Because in the face of sports medicine and sports science that is very much becoming a part of the college game, we are understanding how those things play into the ability to train, play, and win. And it's all part of the equation now, whether you like it or not. It's just a different game than it was 10, 15 years ago when it comes to what they're looking at. And it's just good to know those things. And again, I mean, if you had an injury, probably not that they're going to like put the big like red X on you, but it's just good to know that like these questions are being asked now, you know, just like you're saying, like, would a family know that they're being asked about, you know, what are the parents like? You know, it's just good to know that these questions are on the table because then it shows you that you could take a proactive stance on them as you're going into this process and know that it's literally not just about everything that they're seeing on the field with you. It's a part of it, don't get me wrong, but there are other things that they are looking into now too.
Everything, right? Because ultimately, you're bringing, as a college coach, you've worked really hard to develop your program and almost create a family, right? It's so important. You're trying to, in a college program, you're trying to create and develop a family and a culture and a great environment. So whoever you bring into that, you need to make sure they can fit into that and they're going to be a positive influence within your family. So you want to know everything. And the best college coaches are asking questions you probably haven't even thought of as parents, right? They want to, like we touched on, how are the parents? How is their injury history? You know, what do they watch the game outside of playing for you? Those things. They're looking at everything to see, is this player a good fit for our environment? There's so much that comes into it.
Super. Yeah. And it makes such a difference. So with all this, I mean, there's so many things out there to get a player recruited and get them seen. And there's a lot of like recruiting services and all these variety of things that are, thanks to the world of social media and the internet, that are out there. Do you, to your players, recommend that anyone consider services like this? Or do you think that the more organic process that you guys facilitate is the more desired manner?
But for us, I would say if you're at a good club in a good location and you play at a good level, you shouldn't need a recruiting service, is my honest opinion on that. I don't think you need to be spending the extra money to do it. If you're living in Nebraska, and there's one club in Nebraska and you're not going to these showcases or tournaments, and maybe you're a small club that doesn't have many connections, it may make sense, right? If you're kind of cut off a little bit from the soccer landscape. But I think in the main, if you're doing what you should be doing and you're at a club that gives you the support and the help and the guidance that you need, you shouldn't need to be having to spend extra money to do this. I would save the money and go to college ID camps that you might have interest in the summer and things like that, is my honest opinion on that.
Yeah, no, I think that's, I mean, I just think it's really easy to be like, wow, it's this really fancy, shiny recruiting process that I saw online. Like, you always want the best for your kid. And I think that's a very good way of putting it, of like, you know, if you're at a place where you have less resources, maybe that's something that's more valuable to you. But if you have enough of those resources in place, your money is better spent getting your kid in front of those people and engaging with them and also getting exposed to that team as a, you know, that culture and those camps to see if it really is a good fit for them and the coaches at the same time. So I think that's really good advice. So as the players are going through the recruiting process, there are definitely some timelines that the NCAA kind of allows for certain things to happen or not, and certain rules that occur with contacting and stuff like that. Can you give us just a soft overview of what those timelines look like, just so for someone who has no concept that these things exist, what does that look like for timelines that you can contact, what to expect as you are able to communicate with a coach and things like that?
Yeah, so basically, probably the easiest and simplest way to explain it would be basically your freshman and sophomore year, there's not a lot of contact with college coach directly. Basically, at the end of your sophomore year moving forward, that's when it kind of all starts. So basically, the actual date, June 15th, following your sophomore year, is when college coaches can start to call you and text you, okay? Well, I think it's August 1st of your junior, starting your junior year, is when you're actually then allowed to go and take unofficial and official visits on colleges and go visit. So ultimately, you look at freshman, sophomore year, not a lot of contact is going to take place. At the end of your sophomore year is when it can kind of start that direct contact with college coaches. Having said that, you can call a college coach and you can email a college coach whenever you want.
But if he doesn't respond.
Yeah, but when we get that, like we'll have a kid, well, I called a college coach and I said, well, what year are you? I'm a sophomore. He's not allowed to call you back.
Right, exactly.
You can call him and he can, if you call him and you get him on the phone, you can speak with him, but correct, he can't call you back.
Correct.
Now, obviously some people on this pod will ask, well, how come then there are sophomores that commit? And it's like, well, basically how that happens is a college coach will then reach out to a club coach and say, such and such called me. I can't call him back. Can you tell him to call me at this time?
Yeah.
And the kid can call him again.
The magical connections.
Exactly. So there is communication that takes place, but it can't be necessarily initiated from the college coach to that student athlete. Basically, at the end of your sophomore year is when it kind of all starts. But you can reach out to college coaches whenever. Just know if you send an email as a freshman and a sophomore, generally speaking, you'll get an email back. But it will basically say, thanks for your interest. Here is the details on our summer ID camp. They can only really send you information about their camps coming up. So that's kind of a standard email.
Yeah, which is really good for them to know and expect going into that, you know, as you're going through that process, because those rules exist and you just may not be aware of them, or it's just good to understand, like, what is the most productive way to navigate those. Like, you know, if you are a really good player and you're really interested and you would really like them to start to get to know about you, know that you're tossing that information out there to them. You may not hear back, but, you know, you never know what putting your name in the queue does, but just know that to expect that there may be no response on the other side. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're not interested. It just means they can't.
Exactly. And the other piece is, even as a junior and a senior, when you're emailing college coaches during the fall, don't be surprised if you don't get a response for a while, because they're so focused on the season. Yep. In terms of winning games. So it's a matter of keep at it, keep contacting coaches when it makes sense without being too pushy. And obviously speak to your club coaches about that, when you should be emailing, and, you know, when you send your initial email, if you haven't heard for a few weeks, when should you then send a follow-up, things like that.
Really?
There's college coaches are busy and they get hundreds and hundreds of emails. So sometimes it can take a while for them to get back to you.
Took my coach a while just to respond to my emails, and I was a fairly important person. So I can't even imagine what it would take to sift through hundreds of emails. So it does take time. And that's a good thing just to remember as you're going through that process. So you and I were talking about this. So soccer is becoming a harder sport to get recruited into for a multitude of reasons that kids, especially in the States, may be unaware of, just because these things are kind of unseen things. Talk with us about a couple of the barriers that are now kind of coming up in this new age of college recruiting.
Yeah, I would go as far as to say, I think on the men's side, I think men's soccer is becoming the hardest sport to get recruited to. If you are a true American senior in high school, I think it's becoming harder and harder. Everyone's probably heard now of the transfer portal, whereby I think at the end of last season, there was over 1,500 just men's soccer players in the transfer portal looking to transfer. So the transfer system within the college game now has become so big. And if I'm a college coach and I can take a transfer from a school who's played 2 years already in college,
he's got experience.
I'm probably going to do that as opposed to bring in a freshman who I don't know yet, can his game translate to the college game? Like you touched, I'm going to go for the experience. You can help me win here and now. So the transfer portal is a big, you know, I don't use the word negative, but it is something that all players now have to be aware of and understand that it's going to make it more difficult, which again goes back to the point of players are going to have to do more to get themselves recruited. Clubs are going to have to do more. Clubs are going to have to be honest with players and families about what we need to do to get you recruited, because it is going to make it more difficult moving forward. And on the other side of that, the amount of international players now that are playing in soccer, especially on the men's side, at all levels, not just Division One, but Division Two, Division Three, NAIA, is again making it more difficult for that true senior in high school in the States. So it's very, very difficult now to get recruited and to play at any level. Back when I came over years ago, it was more, the international players were more playing at the Division Two level and NAIA, because the rules were a little bit different. Yeah, so like Division One, I couldn't have gone and played that because amateurism rules and getting paid and stuff. So you had to go Division Two or NAIA. Now the rules have been relaxed a little bit more, where you can get players, you can take an English player who might have signed a one-year pro deal in England, but maybe doesn't meet the threshold of getting paid too much. He can then still come to America and play. So you've got all these international players now coming over to play, which is improving the college game, but making it harder for, like I said, these 17, 18-year-olds in high schools to go and get recruited. To give you an example, the Clemson, one of the biggest schools in the country, 35% of its roster were internationals.
Wow.
That wouldn't have been seen 5 years ago.
Yeah.
North Carolina, who, again, one of the top schools in the country, 25% of their roster this year was international. So even these top schools who can take the pick of all the best American players in the country are still bringing in all these international players as well. And it's something, as clubs, we have to make our players and our families aware of this and not hide behind it. And it's just a matter of, we need to do more. We're going to have to do more for you. We're going to have to start this process early. We're going to have to make sure you're driving the process. It can still happen. We can still get you to the right level. But again, we have to make sure kids are driving the process and doing all the right things, because it is harder and harder for them to get recruited now across all levels.
Absolutely. No, I mean, as I was there, that was starting to grow, was international recruiting. And you're right, it's exploded. And you're right, when a coach can get someone who has bigger, higher level experience, sometimes older in starting age as well, as a result of all those things, like, there are some intangible things that are domestic high schoolers are up against that just make it more challenging, not impossible, but make it more challenging. And also, you probably need to open your eyes to all the opportunities that are available to you as a result of that too, as you are making your considerations and what schools you're pursuing as to where you are most likely to be successful and play as well.
And I think for some players now, like you touched on a bit, by being open-minded to all the opportunities and recognizing that possibly you might have to take an extra step to get to where you want to go to. To use an example, we had one of our former goalkeepers came back and trained with us this week. He went to a small Division II school in North Carolina as a freshman. He's a goalkeeper, did really well, and has now transferred to a Division I school.
Yeah.
Now, he probably was a Division I recruit right out of high school, but the opportunity wasn't there. Instead of him saying, oh, I'm not going to play then if I'm not going to go and play D1, he decided, okay, I'm going to go to North Carolina, small Division II school, play, do well, and now he's transferred to a Division I school, which is where he wanted to be. So that's the one thing that is a positive with the transfer portal is, back when I was coaching Division I, very rarely would you take a transfer from Division II or Division III. You just kind of didn't do that. Whereas now, I think Division I college coaches are more open-minded to say, hey, that kid's done really well at Division II. Yeah, it will correlate to Division I now. We'll take him as a transfer, or take this kid with Division III transfer. So it is opening more doors.
Yeah, to more opportunities.
Yeah, the players, once they're in college, okay, it's probably making it harder for the kids to get into college. But once they're there, if you do well at the level you're at, there's always opportunities to possibly move on and play at a higher level as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, it's like you said, it's kind of a... The transfer portal is a challenge, but it also serves as an opportunity too for things like that, which is important to view it as that as you go through this process as well. It's not necessarily a full-on negative. So kind of all the technical stuff aside, I'm going to have you put your former college coaching hat on now. And talk us through, you know, and obviously every coach is different. Every program is different. There's different cultures, everything. But as a college coach and you're standing on a sideline of a tournament, like looking at players, What are things that you look for in a player? What are things that stand out to the coach? Like, the kid doesn't even have a chance to talk to you yet. You are watching him play, or things that you are observing throughout the entire time that you were in his presence. What are things that a college coach looks for as he's going through that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously different from position to position, right? So if you're looking, when you sit down at a field, if you look at the field and you see a 6'5" center back, you're like, oh, I'm going to watch this kid.
Yeah. You can't teach tall.
Yeah. You know, so it's different to what pertains to each position. But in the main, it's when you sit down, you want to see, okay, is the kid comfortable with the ball? Can they play? Are they comfortable? You know, can they play? Technically, from a technical standpoint, are they good with the ball, regardless of what position you play? Like I touched on earlier, that the changing landscape of the game, it used to be easy to be a center back. You know, win your headers, win your tackles, that was about it. Now the way the game's gone.
Harder now.
Yeah, now the way the game's gone in terms of building out of the back and playing, there's a lot more pressure on center backs. People expect them to be really good on the ball and to play and be brave, because if they give it away at center back, you're probably going to get scored on. So it's, again, looking at how the game's going to go the next few years, everybody needs to be good on the ball now, regardless of what position you play. So that's kind of the first thing. But then you're also looking at, when you look at it a little deeper, it's okay, how does he cover ground? Is he athletic? Because again, at every level, you've got to be athletic nowadays. Can he cover ground? Then it's the little things of, okay, has he got personality? And that's one of the biggest things college coaches say they struggle to find, are kids with personality on the field. It's almost not cool as a 17, 18-year-old to be out there and show personality. Everyone kind of just wants to fit in and play and do their thing. Whereas when you get this kid who's demanding of other people and organizing and communicating, you know, we use the term in England, they're almost considered a bit busy. You know, it's not really the cool thing. But those are the players that college coaches want to see. They want to see kids out there with personality and leadership.
Yeah, they don't want a wallflower.
No, they don't. And I think as a player, do what you can to separate yourself from everybody else, right? Have you got personality? Have you got leadership skills? Are you gonna be tough in the tackle? You know, are you gonna be demanding of your teammates? Those are the little things that really stand out. You can sit down, you might sit down at a field and you may not have even paid any attention yet to the players. But if you all of a sudden just hear a kid talking and demanding and communicating, you're like, okay. And you almost start to watch that kid and you want him to be good. Like, you want him to be good because you're like, okay, he's a good leader and he works hard. So you almost think, okay, I hope he's good because he's got something about him. So it's that leadership and commitment and those little things that separate you from other kids. Then, like I said, it's, are you technically good? Are you explosive? Do you work hard? College coaches are always watching. So they'll always watch, okay, when the ball's been given away, when your team's given the ball away, how do you react? Do you work hard to win it back, or do you soak and do you pout? And how's your body language? I think the best coaches are always looking at kids' body language in terms of when they've got the ball, but most important, when they give it away or when their team gives it away. Are they a team player that's going to work hard to win it back, or are they one of those individuals that are going to soak and not work hard to win it back? Because you can't carry any passengers anymore. The game's all about transition. Everybody has to press together. Everybody has to look to win the ball back together. And you can't carry somebody that doesn't want to work hard without the ball. So it's those intangibles as well you're looking for.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting working on that level. A couple of very interesting insights for a couple of coaches I work for that they brought up of things they noticed. So once we're like off the field or once the game is done, that brought them to consider recruiting someone or not. Because like, good players, all the above. There was a kid that they were recruiting that they, you know, he had equal talent to a couple of other people. You always have to realize they're always recruiting someone that's probably equal talent to you, you know, but he's like, okay, so it was a midfielder, you know, very talented on the ball, you know, strong skill set. They were in the high consideration. After the game, the kid dropped his trash from his bag on the ground, looked at it, and walked away. And there was a trash can about 10 feet away. And the coach said, that spoke more volumes to me than watching what you did on the field today.
Yeah, I've got two great stories to share with that. And we, like I said, we always say to our players, college coaches are always watching.
Yeah.
Even when we're at a showcase, how you're acting in the hotel. You know, how are you messing around, or are you being polite and respectful? College coaches are always watching. I was watching a game years ago with John Trask, the former Wisconsin coach, and they were recruiting a kid, and he's a good player. He actually went on to still play Division I in a different state, but a good player. They were recruiting, and I sat watching the game with him. And at the end of the game, I think the team had just lost, and the club coach brought his team in, and the club coach was talking to them. And this one player that they were recruiting just wasn't paying attention to anything the club coach was saying. Everyone was sat down, apart from this kid who was stood up, just had a terrible body language, wasn't paying attention. And right there and then, the Wisconsin coach at the time crossed him off the list. And yep. We're like, oh, we're not recruiting him. And then I've had another game I was at watching. And this goes along to not just college coaches watching players, but also watching parents. And a college coach was sat watching a game, and the kid actually played well. And he's like, yeah, I like him. He's doing this. But then at the end of the game, that parent went and had a go at the club coach for some unknown reason. And he's been yelling through the game anyway. And the college coach was like, I like him, but his dad seems a bit of an issue. But he was still willing to kind of compromise on it. But then at the end of the game, the parent went and had a go at the club coach, and the college coach went, yeah, that did it for me. Done. Not recruiting him. The college coaches are always watching how players act, and they're always watching how parents act as well.
And your actions speak louder than words. And so whether it's on-field actions, off-field actions, like you said, they ask questions you never would have even thought of that help them understand what type of a person they're signing on with. And it's just good to know that, you know, everything that you do matters when you are in that situation. And being a good person and a good steward and a good teammate and a person that works hard and is purposeful in your actions are the things that make you stand out.
Yeah, I think as a coach, again, it's one of the hardest things. It's hard to coach, you want to coach good people. And it's hard to coach people that aren't the best. It's hard. I've been there where you're never going to have 25 kids on your roster that are all great. There's always going to be one or two that may have some issues with. It's hard to not coach people that are difficult and aren't necessarily good people. It's difficult. You want to coach good people. You know, and to your point about the questions college coaches are asking, with the whole transfer portal now, college coaches will always ask you now, how many clubs has this kid been at? Has he been at one club, two clubs, four clubs? And if a kid is what we call a club hopper, it's a red flag. Because of the transfer portal now, they're like, well, why am I going to bring him in? I know if he doesn't play his first year, him and his parents pick up their stuff and go somewhere else. Yep. We don't want that. So they're even looking at now, how many clubs has this kid played for? And if he's played for multiple clubs, it's a red flag most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, another thing they're kind of looking into.
That's very interesting. So kind of along those lines, so we've talked about a lot of things that players can do to, you know, maintain good contact, what they need to do to initiate a process, what they need to do to develop themselves as a player and be aware of who they are as a player. Are there things that players or parents should be aware of that they shouldn't do, like we had kind of talked about before? Are there just some things as we kind of close up? We've talked about a lot of the to-dos, but sometimes it's good to learn not as much what you need to do, but also what not to do, so that way you can make your process more effective.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've probably touched on a few there too, but for me, it's more about always being conscious that you're being watched. You know, whatever club you play for, always be conscious that you're representing that club and you're representing yourself, and always try and represent yourself in the best light, both on the field and off the field, because you never know who's watching. You know, it might be where maybe you're being recruited by a Division I school, but he can't get to the game, but he's asked a friend of his who's a Division III coach to take a look. Now, you might be thinking that Division I coach isn't watching, but he's going to get a report from his friend. So again, you're always being watched. And it's about, we want to work with good people. Ultimately, you want to work with good people, and you want everybody in the boat rowing the same way. And it's a matter of showing that. So in terms of on the field, okay, have personality, be competitive, have that will to win, but also do it in the right way. Be respectful of your teammates, be respectful of the referees. Don't be yelling at referees. And as blunt as it sounds, I always say, listen, just don't act a punk. Don't do things that you don't think your grandparents would want to see.
Yeah.
You do something that you think your grandparents would hate you see doing, don't do it. And that goes for parents as well, right? It's just on this, there's nothing worse than on a sideline when you see parents yelling and screaming at kids.
Mm-hmm.
Let them play. Okay. Don't do that on the sideline, because that's going to negatively impact your child as well, both in terms of their development and their love of the sport, and probably for them to get to a higher level as well.
Absolutely. So
for me, in general, it's just about the best players and the players that go to the highest levels, they do the right things all the time in terms of how they play, how they conduct themselves. Like you said, even if it's, I always tell players, when you're walking off the field, don't walk past a piece of trash. Even if it's not yours, pick it up.
Make the place better than you found it.
Exactly. Just do the right things all the time. And it sounds very simplistic, but it's hard to do for a lot of people. Just try and do the right things all the time, even when other people aren't watching, because they always are.
Yeah. And I would say, so we've really obviously dug deep into this whole recruiting process. And I'm sure as someone's getting started, this sounds very intimidating and there's a lot to be done and all that stuff. But I think, and you and I commented about this before we got started, it's also important not to lose yourself in this process and not to get so focused on it that we don't lose sight of the player and their love of the game and their balance in life throughout all of these years that all of this is going on. So maybe can you just speak to that as we wrap up all these thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think, but firstly, for me, the whole recruiting process should be a massive positive. It should be something that should be embraced and enjoyed by the player, by the parents, because if they get to that stage where they're getting recruited to play in college, you know, you should be proud of that. As a player and as a parent, you should be proud of your son or daughter that they've committed themselves to this level to develop, to become a good player, that they're going to play in college, right? I mean, ultimately, it's just over 5% of high school male players get to play in college. That's it. 5%.
The tight numbers.
So if you get to play at any level in college, any level, okay, that should be celebrated, because you're one of 5% that are playing at that level. So look at it as a real positive. Okay. Don't allow it to become so stressful that you then stop enjoying, or your son or daughter stop enjoying playing. Okay. And as parents, you then stop enjoying watching your son or daughter play because you get so focused on, oh, that was a really bad game and the college coach was there watching. You've just ruined your whole recruiting process. You got to stay calm and allow it to develop and allow it to happen. The amount of times where we've had a parent come up to me and say, oh, yeah, my kid really wants to play in college and what do we need to do? And, you know, we've got to do this, this, this. And I'm like, whoa. He's 14. Calm down.
Take a breath.
Let him play. Let him enjoy it. Ultimately, why have you got your son playing the games? Because you want him to enjoy a sport. You want him to love it. You want him to develop. The college thing, that's the byproduct of that. That's the end game, okay? That's got to be part of the process. And by the way, he might be a really good player and get to a point where he's like, you know what? I've loved playing, but I don't want to play anymore. And that's fine too.
Yep.
You know, he still learned a lot from it. So let's just make sure throughout the process that the enjoyment of the sport is always the primary focus. And everything else that comes with it needs to be enjoyed and embraced. And yes, there's certain things you need to do and there's certain things you need to focus on, but don't let it detract from ultimately why you have your son or daughter doing this. And they've got to always enjoy what they're doing, okay, and want to do it. That's the most important thing. Because like we touched on, being a student athlete is the best experience you can have.
Mm-hmm.
And it does help you in college because you get more support, you get more tutors, you get more help with your academics where you can be a more successful student as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. So I think we're going to leave it on that.
Yeah.
Probably more podcasts to come as a result of this one, I'm sure. But thank you so much, Ben, for joining us today. I hope this has been helpful to our listeners to just help you get some expectations and understanding of what the college soccer recruiting experience is like. You know, and honestly, any sporting recruiting process could benefit from listening to this because these are bigger picture things outside of just the game of soccer. But I hope that you enjoyed the opportunity to kind of get to understand Ben and how the FC coaches handle this process and guide their players through it and, you know, look at the player development process as a whole throughout this. And I hope that you find a way to continue to apply this to your player as you are listening to this. And again, very fortunate to gain insight from someone who is currently engaging with players on this level, has worked on multiple levels, so you can kind of see this experience from multiple angles. So if you ever want to learn more, you can always learn more about FC Wisconsin on either social media at FC Wisconsin Nationals or at fcwisconsin.com. They've been posting a lot of their recent player signings if you want to see those. So it's kind of fun to see where those players go. And thanks to our listeners for joining us again today on the Milwaukee Sports Performance Podcast. And we look forward to joining us next time. Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Lauren. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Hey, just a second. Do you have a friend or a teammate that's recently torn their ACL? Let's face it, this is a devastating injury. And athletes and families that are going through it have so many questions. Which doctor do I go to? Which graft do I choose? Do I need imaging? Should I have surgery now or wait? These questions can be so overwhelming, and we would love to help. We have a free online mini course that covers everything that an athlete and family needs to know from the time of ACL injury until they have surgery. We also cover some of what they can expect immediately following their surgery. This resource is completely free, and it's online either at the link in our bio at @kinetic_SMP, or you can click the link in the show notes below. We'd really appreciate it if you'd share this with anyone that we could try to help as they prepare to recover from this injury.